you might classify it as a non-fussy cookbook. It's one that will get splattered on, it'll get dog-eared, and that is A-OK. It means its recipes stand up to the test of busy families with ingredients that are easy to track down in your grocery store. We're cooking for the real world on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Lindsay Maitland-Hunt worked in the test kitchen at Real Simple Magazine, where she became a full-time recipe developer. That's where she says she learned the hows and the whys of creating a good recipe. She's the author of the new cookbook, Healthy-ish, a cookbook with seriously satisfying, truly simple, good for you, but not too good for you, recipes for real life. Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Well, I love the ish in the title of your cookbook, the ISH, because it gives me some breathing room, some permission to not be all in, but to still try in the kitchen. What is up with the ISH in healthy?
Well, yeah, I think that what's so fun about the concept of healthy-ish is that it's so intuitive. I mean, one of the greatest things about the book coming out is how many people have said to me, oh, healthy-ish, that's exactly how I eat or how I try to eat. And I think it's sort of like having a loose grip on our goals, things like trying to do better, to eat better, to feel better. When there's an ish in there, it signifies to us like that's directionally where we're going, but we can do it, you know, feeling a little less pressure to do it perfectly.
So what is the goal of home cooks? How do you address that when you're trying to put together recipes for healthy-ish?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of home cooks, from my experience working in test kitchens and developing recipes for a wide swath of readers, the goal is to get something delicious on the table, whatever meal that would be. And for me as a recipe developer, I'm also thinking about making sure it's super smart, that the steps are streamlined, there's not too many pots and pans. And for me, it's also super important that not only is the ingredient list relatively short and using things you might have in your pantry, but that the other ingredients you have to buy, that those are in the grocery store too.
It seems also you're, in a way, a recipe editor. As you think of every ingredient going in, you're asking yourself, does this need to be here? Is this essential?
Yes, I like that. I'll take it. I will call myself a recipe editor. I mean, I think that one of the things I've been thinking a lot about and why it's so fun to talk about the book a couple months in and having heard a lot about the reception is that I really care so much about making recipes that, yes, they're simple, but the flavor is still complex. And that doesn't necessarily mean adding something on. So for me, if it wasn't really hitting a note with the flavor, it got cut.
So you have some rules for creating a balanced meal, and they're very clear, very simple. Can you lay them out for us?
Sure. Yeah. So I have 5 rules. The first one is just acid, fat, and salt. And that's because a good recipe is going to find a happy medium between something tart like a lemon, something rich like a pat of butter, and salty. That's more obvious, you know, salt, but it could be something like rich, umami-rich miso paste. It could be fish sauce. And when those 3 come together, that you find a happy balance. The second one is to keep it simple. And I have in my book that I always think about the Coco Chanel quote, before you leave the house, look in the mirror and take one thing off. And mm-hmm. We just talked about that. Basically, don't get overly complicated for the sake of complication. Color and beauty is the 3rd rule, and that's because things that are really nutrient dense, like a carrot, like a beet, a green bean, those colors, they signify nutrients. And so the more you're looking for color, the more nutrients you're going to have on your plate, and color is beautiful. The 4th rule is thinking about flavor boosters and always thinking about having something fun. And for me, I think one of the keys to eating healthy-ish is that I'm still presenting things that maybe in concept you think of as healthy. So obviously I think the thing that is easy to point to is a salad. But for me, if I'm going to eat a salad, I need pockets of deliciousness and unexpected flavors. Like whether that's, yeah, I mean, I have to convince myself to eat a salad. And I think that that's so much about the book is this is hard-won advice for myself.
Mm. So what would add like a little hint of pocket of flavor? What would add those little ahas to a pretty straightforward salad?
Yeah, so the first one I'll always talk about is cheese because cheese is the love of my life.
You're in good company here in Wisconsin. You're good. You can proceed, right?
So cheeses that pack a lot of bang for their buck or whatever the saying is, something like Parmesan, feta, really salty cheeses that in a small package have a lot of flavor. Something like a salted Marcona almond that has a little coating of oil on it. Avocado, as long as it's well salted. Things like one piece of bacon crumbled and tossed throughout a grain bowl or a salad, that's going to actually add so much flavor into what you're eating that you don't necessarily need to have a whole pile of bacon on the side. It's signifying to your brain that you're eating something really satisfying, delicious, and hearty.
That makes sense, yeah. There's also this approach you have of maximizing volume but minimizing calories. What is that balance?
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like that's one of the more loose, calorie has such a strict, occupies such a strict place in our minds, but I think of it as more loose application. What I'm talking about is getting as big of a bowl of food or plate as I can without having it all be like a big hunk of steak and a big pile of mashed potatoes. And that goes back to the idea of having a salad that has something exciting folded in so that, yes, it's a lot of vegetables, it's a lot of greens, that's a bigger bowl, but and a bigger volume. But things that aren't as calorie dense, for instance, here, vegetables and lettuce, they're going to go a longer way.
So it's not like, you know, 3-4 bites and you're done with that main course.
Right, because something like a grilled cheese, which I love, and the whole point of Healthy-ish is not saying never to any foods. For me, it's talking about the middle 80%, and 10% of the time is thinking about eating a little more restricted for whatever reason, and 10% of the time is really going for like the crispiest, gooeyest, cheesiest grilled cheese of all. But in the middle area, yeah, I want to eat 40 bites of food, not 4.
Lindsay Maitland-Hunt is with us. She's the author of the new cookbook, Healthy-ish, a cookbook with seriously satisfying, truly simple, good for you, but not too good for you recipes for real life. She is a recipe developer, and you can call into the conversation with your questions, your approach to Healthy-ish at 800-642-1234. What are your biggest challenges as you face in getting something healthy or healthy-ish on the table? Let's explore new approaches, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Lindsay, what advice, what tools to make your kitchen more streamlined that have really helped you as you approach these recipes, and as we try to tackle recipes when we're tired, perhaps coming home from a long day, and we just want to kind of get in and out of the kitchen, what tools help us?
So specifically cooking tools?
Cooking tools or just the setup in your kitchen?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that's funny about kitchen setup is that we're all walking into a completely different room when we're talking about kitchen setup. But there are a few things that I think can help. And one of the things for me is having a lot of Tupperware or, you know, storage containers for food that you've cooked. If you don't have the right things to put the food you've cooked away in, it's harder to grab it out of the fridge. And that goes for ingredients, too. So if I buy a big bag of something and I say it's brown rice and I cut it open, it's so much easier to pour that bag into some sort of storage container, label it, and then it's easy to grab in the cabinets. And just having a lot of these types of storage containers makes organization so much easier, makes finding those ingredients so much easier. And for me also, it's thinking about a balance between sort of single-use ingredients, like I don't know if I need a device that separates an egg yolk from the white, but I have found that when I'm in a kitchen with someone who maybe just has the basics, they have the knife, they have a cutting board, they have some pots and pans, but I've discovered that people are so much more likely to make a salad if they have a salad spinner, because then the leaves are dry. Or, for instance, using lemon juice, buying a lemon reamer, something, or a lemon squeezer, something that will just not only get all the juice out of the lemon or lime for your recipe, but in the end ends up saving a lot of money. And those sort of things that extract the maximum value or flavor from those healthier, better for you ingredients makes cooking healthy-ish so much easier.
Lindsay Maitland-Hunt is a recipe developer, author of the new cookbook, Healthy-ish, and you can join us as we talk about healthy and enjoyable cooking. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Share a link with us about your favorite healthy-ish recipe. Tell us about how you cook in a healthy-ish way. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. The cookbook is Healthy-ish, a cookbook with seriously satisfying, truly simple, good for you, but not too good for you recipes for real life. Recipe developer and cookbook author Lindsay Maitland-Hunt stays with us. Super practical. One of my favorites in this is called All Day Snacker. Defines me. It's lunch for someone who would prefer to snack throughout the day. Think of it as like a grown-up Lunchable. Cuts of veggies, avocado, cube cheese, crackers, olives, you get the gist. What are the biggest challenges you face in getting something healthy or healthy-ish on the table? Have you ever changed or a guilty pleasure recipe to make it healthier? What did you do? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Well, Lindsay, here we are at the start of the day. Breakfast a lot on people's minds. Sometimes we're trying to feed kids, get them out the door, or you've overslept and you don't have a lot of time to put something together. What advice do you have for incorporating healthy-ish recipes into our breakfasts?
Yeah, so I think one of the best things you can do is set aside some time on a weekend or on a weeknight to make a big batch breakfast. I mean, there's two approaches, right? So there's keeping things on hand for quick toasts or egg dishes, and I include a lot of those in the book. But what I've found with on-the-go breakfast, if I have made, for instance, a loaf of my seeded whole wheat banana bread, or I have the toasted coconut muesli in a bag on my counter next to a bowl and a spoon, I am so much more likely to eat breakfast when I'm in a rush, or to throw a lid on a jar with some almond milk and muesli in there, and I can take it where I need to go. So I think when it comes to rush, if there's a little bit of planning, because obviously you do need to take time in advance, but you can use a recipe that has, you know, up to 16 servings, and that's 16 breakfasts that you don't, you know, need to worry about.
You have some really interesting variations on toast. You made me see toast in a whole new way. Can you walk us through some of those things you can do with toast?
Yeah. So I love toast so much. But in 2018, there's whole cookbooks dedicated to toast. So the goal for me was, what are five ways that I can look at toast anew that use ingredients? That's one of the tenets of the book, is these ingredients have to be things that we can all find at our regular grocery store, but a fresh take. So there's a peanut butter toast, and it's spread over a raisin nut bread, and there's a banana on top of the peanut butter, but the new twist is a sprinkling of shredded coconut and a dusting of cinnamon. So basically, you know, your regular peanut butter banana toast, a few upgrades. There's a savory toast. I love this one. This might be my favorite, which is a whole wheat toast spread with olive tapenade, and then a few slices of cheddar and avocado, and then some red chili flakes with sea salt, olive oil, things that really bring the flavor out of the avocado with the richness.
That will wake you up with some red chili flakes in your morning.
Exactly. And for me, it's thinking about, you know, we talked about maximum volume, minimum calories, and avocado put on top of a slice of toast. That's just a lot bigger than a slice of toast on its own.
So a lot of people turn to smoothies as a way to start the day, but those aren't necessarily as filling as we need them to be. Do you have any tips for making better smoothies?
Yes. So one of the biggest things, I think, is thinking about fiber and protein in your smoothie. And when I'm talking about that, it's things like using a whole cup of frozen chopped spinach just in one smoothie. And that sounds like a lot, but when you're buying, you know, you can buy a 24 or 36 ounce bag of spinach already pre-chopped in the freezer aisle. And something like that is going to keep you full, because when there's more fiber in a dish, it takes longer to go through your digestive system. And so that's more likely to keep you full until lunch. It's also things like, this is a place where it can be really flexible. I think things like nut butter, seeds, those sorts of ingredients that we already keep in our pantry, but that have a lot of protein in them and fiber as well, those are going to make a smoothie more satisfying and last longer, as well as just thinking about reducing sweetness and sugar where you can, so that there's not a, you know, a spike and then a dip while you're waiting for lunch.
And you also have some really creative bowls in the morning, bowls that I wouldn't think of. I'm like cereal from a box sometimes, and I'm looking at this page where you have so much color and so much interest and texture in these morning bowls. Can you walk us through one of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that I started doing as I was trying to eat breakfast that kept me more full throughout the day. I started using brown rice as cereal, or using barley as cereal. And what I mean by that is just using it as the plain base and adding, my favorite is unsweetened almond milk, but you could do this with any liquid, you know, cashew milk, hemp milk, regular milk, whatever you wanted. And heating those together and then putting interesting toppings. So the one that I like the best is the "why didn't I think of that" bowl. And what's in that bowl is, you know, a hearty scoop of peanut butter, a chopped apple, and then, again, talking about fiber, because these things need to matter to keep us full until lunch, there's poppy seeds and sesame seeds on top. And the reason I included poppy and sesame seeds is because one of the things I think a lot about as a recipe developer is using ingredients frequently. If I'm going to ask someone to buy poppy seeds, which I do for the seeded whole wheat banana bread, I want to make sure that I give you another idea for how to use that ingredient somewhere else in the book. And that sort of cooking is what makes it easier to, as we've been talking about, cook more healthy-ish on a day-to-day basis, keeping these sorts of things like seeds in our cabinet and working it in little ways, just pouring a bit on top of your breakfast, will keep you full longer.
Right, and you were just not using a one-and-done ingredient and putting it away in the cabinet and, oh, look, 3 years later, I'm trying to search for that way in the back.
Exactly, exactly. I hate when that happens, and I want people to trust me, and I think keeping their wallets in mind is one of the most important things for creating trust with the reader.
Let's go to Dan, who joins us from La Crosse. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'm a music teacher and a songwriter. I do a lot of substitute teaching. One of my songs is called "I Love My Breakfast." And I'd like to just share the a little bit of it. I wake up in the morning as early as a bird. Staying up too late at night would have been absurd. My stomach tells me loudly it has an attitude. I've got a busy day ahead. I'd better give it food. I love my breakfast. It helps me run fast. I love my... And then I let the kids help me fill in the blanks.
I love it. So, Dan, what is your breakfast that is filling you up?
Oh, on good days, I will have slow-cooked oatmeal, and I'll put in some nuts, especially walnuts, and I'll chop up some dried apricots. I come from an apricot family. Dried cranberries, cut up an apple. And then on some days I will fry up two egg whites, one egg yolk, do some onions, peppers, and I don't always eat that well, but on good days I do that.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing and for sharing your story. And Lindsay, what do you make? First of all, a slow-cooked oatmeal.
Oh, I think that's great. I mean, sounds like I should come over to Dan's house for a healthy-ish breakfast. That sounds delicious. And I think something like slow-cooked oatmeal is so smart because it's something you can make in a big batch. If you have a slow cooker, you can make it overnight. I love that idea.
One of the recipes you shared with us was polenta rounds with fried eggs and avocado bean salsa. I know Dan was talking a little bit there about eggs. What can we do with our eggs? Can you walk us through this recipe?
Oh, yeah. So that is one of the, I grew up, special nights we're always having breakfast for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the sort of recipe that works equally well for a vegetarian dinner as it does for a special weekend breakfast. And one of the ingredients I really, really love that is easy to find in the grocery store shelf is pre-cooked polenta. It just comes in a log on the shelf, so it's shelf-stable. If you buy it, you can keep it in your cabinet. And what you do is you slice it into rounds and then cook those in some oil in a nonstick skillet so they get a really delicious crust. And that's just tossed with canned beans that have been mixed with cilantro, pickled red onions, some avocado, and topped all off with a fried egg.
And how do you approach your eggs? Do you like to add them to your dishes? How do they work in your dishes?
You mean how do I approach?
Yeah, you're topping this dish with fried eggs. Do you also see eggs more as part of the base, or how are you working in your eggs?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it depends on the format of the recipe. So there's another recipe in the book called Hummus and Avocado Flatbreads with a Crispy Fried Egg. That's similar in that it's a toasted flatbread, a smear of hummus, avocado, egg on top. But when you're thinking about something like a frittata, that's obviously going to be an egg base. Or if it's the chorizo tacos, those are really much more eggs front and center because you're cooking some chorizo and then the eggs go into the pan and everything comes together into sort of one big mass.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it depends. And obviously if it's a soft-cooked egg or a hard-cooked egg, that's going to get added at the end. It really varies on what you're looking for.
And this recipe for polenta rounds with fried eggs and avocado bean salsa, by the way, that is on the Morning Show page on WPR.org, features protein-rich foods like eggs and beans. And this salsa, avocado bean salsa, walk us through that.
Yeah, so I absolutely love canned beans. I understand that in an ideal world, we'd all be soaking dried beans and cooking them with maybe a bay leaf and an onion, and that's really delicious. But for me, taking advantage of these sort of pantry staples that you can have stocked and ready to go is awesome. And another thing I think a lot about is swap. So this is with pinto beans, but you could use something like little red beans, or you could even use cannellini beans, great northern beans, and it's tossed. So one can of beans is tossed with one chopped avocado. There's a whole quarter cup of fresh cilantro leaves, and if you don't like cilantro, you could use Italian flat leaf parsley. There's chopped quick pickled red onions, which is one of my favorite recipes in the book. That's in my go-to component section in the back. And then all of that's just mixed with olive oil, vinegar, salt, and pepper. Super easy.
We're talking right now with Lindsay Maitland-Hunt. She's the author of the new cookbook, Healthy-ish. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Perhaps she has a way to make your favorite dish more healthy-ish. Maybe there's a way that is time-saving that you found on your favorite dishes, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lindsay, let's get into the section on soups. And in your book, you're a little bit apologetic because you're saying soups may take us a little bit longer than some other recipes, but bear with us. And when I saw that, I was like, what? I mean, soups are like my shortcut. I can throw things together really quick in soups. So why are your soups perhaps taking a little bit longer?
It's interesting that you say that because I think one of the funny things about writing a cookbook that has a large audience is that everyone's coming at everything from such a different perspective. Where I am coming from with this is that so many of the recipes in the book, I don't give times because I think everyone takes a different amount of time to cook.
Mm-hmm.
But they're sort of start to finish, you're probably going to get dinner on the table somewhere between 30 and 40 minutes. With soups, because you're making such a big batch and they're going to be easily freezable or they need more flavor because you're building up from the bottom, that's just going to take a longer time. And I really want everyone to do the steps right. So that means stirring the onions, you know, sauteing them for 10 to 12 minutes. You don't need to stand over the pot. And I think really experienced cooks, like it sounds like you are, you might
No. That's very generous. No.
Well, what's so interesting about soup is some people think it's super easy. And some people are really intimidated by it.
Yeah.
And so my approach here was thinking about, okay, different types of soups. Some of them are pureed and creamy, and some of them have nuggets, chunks in them, whatever you want to call it, and like the sausage, potato, white bean, and kale soup. The idea is that you're doing everything right, so it builds up a lot of flavor, because if you're taking time to make something that you could buy in a can on the shelf, I want it to really knock the ball out of the park.
Let's go to Justin, who joins us from New London. Hi, Justin.
Hello. I had a curious question. So I'm a third shift security officer, and I find it difficult to have, you know, the typical three meals a day. What would your suggestion be on that?
Because you're eating sort of as you're working throughout the day at different times?
Yeah, generally I eat, you know, when I wake up, which is generally about, you know, 5 in the afternoon, and then I eat about 2 in the morning.
Yeah, so I think one of the greatest things would maybe be packing more snacks that you can be snacking throughout the day. Maybe it's, I mean, there's two approaches, right? One is just saying, like, this is when I eat. I'm either going to eat bigger meals, and thinking more about portion size, or it's leaning into the struggling to eat three full meals a day and making snacks more exciting and really thinking about having a lot of protein and fiber in there so that you can stay hungry between those longer stretches.
Okay, so probably snacking would be most ideal for my situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a recipe in my book that's called Not Your Average Trail Mix, but it's super easy to do at home. It's just roasted cashews, pumpkin seeds, dried apricots, and then there's crystallized ginger and white chocolate chips. And I think when it's something that there's a little bit of excitement in each bite, it makes snacking feel a little less sad.
Justin, thanks so much for the call. There was this other recipe that I think you passed for lunch, but it could also pass for snacking, where you make a whole plate of veggies for yourself with some olives and some crackers and cheese. And I just thought, well, yeah, I know how to do this, but you give some really, you know, specific advice.
For the all-day snacker?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that really helps is doing little tricks in advance when you're prepping your meal. For instance, cut the avocado already and put the surface of the plastic wrap directly onto the avocado so that it doesn't go brown. Pre-cutting everything so they're ready to eat just on the fly. If you're standing and working all day, if you can't sit down with a knife and cut the carrots into sticks. So it's thinking about all of those things being set into a container so they're ready to eat on the fly.
Here's another tip from Lindsay Maitland-Hunt's 9 pieces of advice for success in the kitchen. Cooking gets easier over time. A recipe not coming out as expected is not a reflection of you. Lindsay Maitland-Hunt is the author of Healthy-ish, gathering your thoughts, your questions, and how you approach Healthy-ish in your life at 800-642-1234. What is your go-to quick and healthy breakfast? What about a lunch that can take you to work? And parents, how do you get your kids to eat healthy-ish? We are all ears. Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update right here on the Ideas Network. The recipes are flavorful, they're practical. Almost all of the recipes in Healthy-ish can be made vegetarian, but for meat eaters, there are chapters devoted to pork and beef, chicken, turkey, fish, and shrimp. We're learning what it means for a recipe to work in this age when you can Google chicken casserole and find boatloads of options, when competing with what we see on Instagram is completely out of our ballpark on any given evening. We're talking about real-world cooking on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Lindsay Maitland-Hunt is a recipe developer, food writer living in Brooklyn. She's the author of Healthy-ish. You can ask your question about how to make a dish work for your busy schedule at 800-642-1234. What's your go-to healthy-ish and quick dinner after a long day? Join in the conversation on air or email ideas at WPR.org. Lindsay, let's get back to the soup conversation for just a moment and find out where you fall on the order of how we go about stock. Do we buy vegetable broth or chicken broth in the grocery store? Do we make it on our own?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the one thing I'll say is that however you're going to get dinner on the table or whatever meal it is, I'm happy with. If that means buying stock, great. But if you do have a little more time on your hands or you like a project or you're in the habit of making stock, I have two recipes, one for vegetable stock and one for what I call whole poached chicken with bonus stock. And that's because you can definitely make chicken stock just with bones, and there is a variation for that. But why not just poach an entire chicken and get stock on the side, and then you have poached chicken meat ready to go, whether that's in soups, which I have a bunch of recipes for using that poached chicken, or it could be in a chicken tartine, which I have in the lunch section. The idea being that you really stretch the value a lot further.
Something you were talking about earlier about infusing salads with a pop of taste. I saw that idea come through in this loaded baked potato and cauliflower soup recipe where you're using the bacon fat to really infuse the soup, but you also... I just see this cauliflower as such an aha moment for the soup because it doesn't weigh it down so much.
Exactly. And one of the things about most potato soups is they have that really starchy sort of glutinous mouthfeel. And that just means like, you know, mouthfeel can sound like a fancy word, but really what it is like, does it stick around for a long time after you've swallowed a bite of soup? And cauliflower comes in and it sort of balances out that classic russet potato taste to make this feel a lot lighter. And starting with the bacon, since the entire soup cooks from the ground up, the first step is that bacon fat infused, you don't notice that it's a lighter soup. And that's, again, hearkening back to the maximum volume, minimum calories tenet, the idea that you can stretch classic taste a lot further by just inverting when you introduce the bacon into like a loaded baked potato situation.
Let's go to Justina, who is joining us from Baldwin. Hi, Justina.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I have all the kind of kitchen staples in my kitchen, as well as a lot of ingredients for chili, because that's my favorite thing, just to throw together. But I was wondering if you had any suggestions of anything that would be a little bit lighter or not as heavy to use with those ingredients.
For chili. Or just chili ingredients, you're saying?
Chili ingredients and then any kitchen staples that we would have around as well.
Yeah, so I think one of the great things about kitchen staples is that they can sort of act as the backbone of any cooking you're doing. So a simple thing is, it sounds like you have chili ingredients on hand. I love chili. Adding, and this is so easy, just like adding a bag of pre-chopped frozen kale or spinach or even corn, introducing something fresh that makes a bigger batch and doesn't require you to approach an entirely new way of cooking. And things like beans, you know, you can use those the way you use lentil. You could make a bean soup, and that gets a lot of flavor, but without going really deep down the root of a lot of meat. Is that the sort of thing you're looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justina. And just to, out of coincidence, that's what I brought for my lunch today, Justina, is leftover chili. So you write a lot about fish and that we're intimidated as home cooks as we approach fish. How can we look at fish in a new way?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think can be scary is fish skin. most fish, when you, I mean, all fish comes with skin on it, right? That's how it exists. And it's easy to buy boneless, skinless fillets, but I would rather offer home cooks methods that help them know that I'm guiding them along in the kitchen to get all the benefit. There's so many delicious nutrients that are in fish skin. And for me, it's about giving specific instructions. So saying, really, just don't touch that salmon skin for 5 to 7 minutes while it's cooking in the pan. Or thinking about how do you use the broiler in a way that helps you get really a fantastic, nice fillet of Arctic char to get to the right level of cooking without needing to babysit something on the stove. So I think thinking about, obviously, things like new flavor combinations, but also understanding that using the right technique, and I will walk you along through that, that it's a great way to reapproach fish.
And you have another protein, specifically boneless, skinless chicken breasts. One downside is that they dry out so easily. We can easily go the wrong direction with chicken breasts or cook them too long, which I know I do as well. So you shared this recipe for coriander rubbed chicken breasts with lentil radicchio salad. First of all, tell us how you get the juicy boneless chicken breast.
I love this technique so much. I used it yesterday. What you do is you create a steam environment for the chicken while it's in an oven, in the oven. What you do is you season the chicken like you would any normal chicken breast. Here it's done with coriander, but you can just do it with salt and pepper. Use whatever spices you like best. And then a little bit of olive oil in there and a quarter cup of water. And then you cover the pan. This is in something like a 9x13 casserole dish. You can use an 8x8 baking pan. You cover it with foil. And then when you bake it in the oven, steam that's released from the water basically does like a version of poaching for the chicken. So it cooks it evenly throughout. And because what you're looking at often with a chicken breast is a sort of football-shaped thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to, by the time it gets all the way cooked through in the center, the outside is going to be so overcooked. So when you create a steam environment, that allows everything to cook through more evenly and to stay juicy, because chicken that's been taken off the bone, any meat that's been taken off the bone, isn't going to stay as juicy. And so you're sort of thinking about and reinfusing that moisture into the chicken breast.
And so now we've got this really nicely done chicken. What are the complements to it in this recipe?
So this is one of my absolute favorite recipes in the book. I'm so excited that you'll have it on the website. It's a lentil radicchio salad, and there's this amazing cook, Yotam Ottolenghi. He's written a ton of cookbooks. I really highly recommend his stuff. And he introduced me to this concept of folding lentils into an everyday salad. So first of all, gets you a lot of protein, a lot of fiber. I love the bitterness of radicchio, but if you didn't love the bitterness of radicchio, you could use something else like escarole. Even romaine would work really well. I love the little Persian cucumbers I love them because they're seedless and they have a better skin to interior ratio, so they're super crispy. And this is a place where I use feta, not too much, just 2 ounces for 4 people, but it's crumbled throughout and folded in, so it's really rich and salty. And then there's a tahini dressing that you make a big batch of, but here it works to make the entire thing read as creamy, salty, delicious, but it's actually just a big bowl of vegetables with a chicken breast on top.
And how does it work for leftovers? Can you use this one for leftovers?
Oh, definitely. What I would recommend doing is not tossing the entire salad with the dressing, packing the salad in a container with the dressing on the side, and the chicken will keep beautifully. I would recommend not slicing it if you have an extra chicken breast. But if you've already sliced it, don't worry about it. Like, it'll stay pretty juicy from that cooking method.
And you saved room for us for dessert in this cookbook. What are some of your dessert creations?
Yeah, so the best for me was thinking about the different ways in which I want to eat dessert. Sometimes that's taking time to make a big batch of cookies, and I do have one of the ones I love so much are these triple chocolate coconut and cashew cookies, and that makes 36 cookies. That's a lot. So the idea being that you're going to use whole wheat flour, it's less sugar than normal, and then stretching the dough further, thinking about things like roasted unsalted cashews, unsweetened shredded coconut, those add a lot of flavor without adding a lot of sugar. But I also want to eat dessert really quick just on my own. So there's something called a chamomile tea affogato, and an affogato is normally done with espresso, but for me, I'm definitely not having espresso at 9 p.m. at night. So this is done with chamomile tea and frozen yogurt for something lighter, and then a dollop of orange marmalade for a little sugary, bitter balance of excitement.
And the whole wheat chocolate chip cookie bars, I'm still getting adequate chocolate chips here, right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. So this is one of the more straightforward. You have mentioned people calling in with the ways that they've made their classic recipes healthy-ish. And for me, the point is, since it's a spectrum, balance is a spectrum, and along it, this is going to stick more in your classic everyday chocolate chip cookie taste, but it's made with whole wheat flour and a little bit less sugar. However, I do use an entire bag of chocolate chips because, like I said, I like to use the entire container. I don't want to ask anyone to use 10 ounces. It's a 12-ounce bag, so you will get a chocolate chip and every bite, maybe two.
So as we begin to wrap up here, Lindsay, what is your best advice for people who really want to eat healthy-ish and be committed to this?
I think that what makes a really big difference is planning. And I'm not talking about really intensive meal prep. I think just choosing a couple recipes that look good, that you give yourself enough time to do, that you definitely check that you have every ingredient. So much of the time when I'm speaking from personal experience, when I've wanted to do something new or better and thinking about making a change, I don't give enough room for it. Mm. And I think when you're thinking about a lifestyle change, if you're trying to eat better, if you're trying to eat healthy-ish, making sure that you're totally set up so when you do start cooking, it all goes smoothly, that's going to encourage you to keep going. So check your ingredients in your pantry, make a real shopping list, give yourself enough time, make sure you have all the tools you need, pull them out before you start cooking. Setting yourself up will make it a lot easier.
Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for all the tips. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lindsay Maitland-Hunt is a recipe developer. She is the author of the new cookbook, Healthy-ish. You can find her recipes for coriander rubbed chicken breasts with lentil radicchio salad and polenta rounds with fried eggs and avocado bean salsa on The Morning Show page, WPR.org. This is produced by Brianne Chasso and Nyasia Ellison. You're listening to the Ideas Network.